Researchers tell us that engaging with social media is the number one online activity for teenagers. In fact, they spend over 80% of their online time interacting with each other while creating, fabricating, curating, and promoting themselves. In a world where social media has become the identity fitting room for so many kids, how can we point them to using social media to the glory of God rather than to the glory of self? We'll be talking about this and much more on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Hey everybody, Walt Mueller here at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, and we're glad you've joined us for this next episode of this podcast, Youth Culture Matters. And as always, I'm here with Jason Sochenik, who is joining us from Spokane, Washington. Jason, welcome.
Yes, indeed. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's always good to have you. How are things going with Project 619?
They're going great.
What are you guys up to?
Yeah, so we are finishing up the school year, so we'll be wrapping up here in June. But there's always the big push right through May. And then we also have right alongside that our annual fundraiser, which is always a lot of fun to be able to see the people that come alongside and support the work that we're doing, which is always really exciting.
Yep. We just did that. And it's you're right. To have those people in the room with you is it's a humbling reminder of so many things. And so we're grateful for that. What are you guys – school presentations, what are you doing right now through May? Is there anything new you're doing, or just catch us up on what's happening and how folks can tap into that? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so one of the easiest ways to learn about it is just to go to our website at project619.org to learn about Life Up Close. Our Sex and God series has become a greater than series, greater than sex, greater than porn. But what we're doing in the schools and what we're doing in the churches is we're busy wrapping up the school year. So what it looks like in the school specifically is we have a 4-day presentation. So we've updated what we've been doing over the last several years. This is the first year that we added almost an entire day on pornography. We've just noticed a huge need to be able to have this discussion. So we added that. And then we also have a longer discussion on sex in the brain, just recognizing those discussions actually spark better conversation in the classroom. And so we've had a lot of fun this year allowing for those two things to have a bigger platform, which has been it's been really intriguing, the conversation. It's been really exciting, the result. And so as we wrap up this year, we'll probably make a few more adjustments. But overall, we've got a really strong 4-day presentation that fits into the human growth and development of most school districts.
Let me ask you about that a minute, because there's so much research coming out on the biochemistry of the brain, the structure of the brain, the way that our bodies are integrated, which, you know, from a Christian perspective, I look at that and I say, it's amazing how God has made us. And so so with all this new information coming out, if I heard you right, you're saying then that in your presentations through Project 619, you're emphasizing that, and there's a good connect being made with kids. They're listening to that and understanding how that works. And then talk about how youth workers, I know we hadn't planned on talking about this, but it really sparks my curiosity. How can youth workers and parents begin to tap into this as well? Because I do think it's a great strategy.
Yes. Well, first of all, I don't think that teens have a lot of discussions around sex and relationship, but the internet is the go-to for most of them because they don't have conversations. And the thing that I know and you know is the more religious the family is, the less likely they are to talk about it in their home. And so what I find when we go into the schools is that they're just starving for these conversations, authentic, real, transparent conversations. I mean, it doesn't mean that we're going into great detail, but what it does mean is that we're opening up the door for the questions that they've had. And a lot of the questions they end up having are around their biology, around the brain, around some of the things that they kind of know that's going on, but they've never had conversations about. And one of the things that I think we can continue doing is just opening the opportunities for conversation. In the classroom and in the churches, what we've learned is that just allowing students to have feedback on the conversations around pornography, around sex in the brain, it actually opens up the door to even further conversation. And that is the thing that I've just absolutely loved. This school year has been a total blast as we just kind of reworked what we were doing. Instead of us just teaching, we're asking the students to engage the information that they're learning, to create some of their own questions, but to also engage the data that's coming forward about biology. And really, all it really does is it continues to point back to what we find in Scripture, very specifically the two becoming one. And that is what I love so much about what we're able to do day in and day out.
Yeah. And that's great. I mean, just, you know, as you track with the science, the developing science that's coming out, what you said there to point back to the Scriptures is a beautiful thing, you know, as the science points back to that God's order and design. Well, we took a sidetrack there. Today, we're going to have a conversation in a little while about kids and social media. This is something that we've talked about before on the podcast, but we're going to be a little more directed in our discussion today and talk about the role that social media plays in the lives of our kids. What are some things that parents and youth workers can do to push back on some of the dangers and encourage using this in the right way? But before we do that, we're going to hit up some of the news stories. And I guess Kenton and Chris may have something for us. These guys are in here today, along with our bilingual intern, Miguel Guzman, has joined them. He's sitting in on the podcast to see how all this works. Probably going to just make his head spin. Because we don't even know how it works, do we? But you guys got a question or something for us today, Kenton?
Yeah, we have a question today, and this one Chris might not fully like, but this one is, if you could choose an imaginary friend, and who would you choose and why? And now it doesn't specify, which means it can be reality, it could be someone you've seen animated or whatever, but who would you choose and why?
If I could choose an imaginary friend.
Well, so all right, so now let me back up. I got to understand the question right, because I'm not imagining this correctly. It's a little bit confusing. Are you asking us to make up an imaginary friend, or are we choosing a real person who we want to be our imaginary friend?
The second one.
Or are we describing our real imaginary friend?
If you have one, feel free to describe him.
Haven't you given our previous guests issue with, you know, taking issue with the questions? Just answer the question.
Well, right. You're right. Byron Borger came in here and he rejected my question. I'm not going to reject it. I just want clarification. I want to answer it correctly. Jason, you have any ideas?
No, those were great clarifiers.
I mean, the best thing I can do is probably dig in and try to find somebody from history who would be a good...
That's what I'm doing. I'm rifling through.
And it can't be Jesus.
People.
I know you want to say Jesus.
No, that's the cliche answer.
Because he is a
friend. That would be,
yes.
Yeah. I'll give you one. Davy Crockett. So here's why I say Davy Crockett. I've thought about this before. The reason I say Davy Crockett is he is a part of my lineage. In some way, he is connected to our family. I don't quite understand the lineage, but I had a grandparents, great grandparents that were Crocketts, and somehow a part of that lineage was Davy Crockett. I mean, there was a story that was told over and over and over again. No one believes me, but he was a part of my lineage. And so I remember as a young boy watching the Disney movies, and I don't know if it was a TV show, but of Davy Crockett, and I was incredible. I had a Davy Crockett lunchbox. I was so fascinated with it. And then when I learned he was a part of my lineage, I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. So I don't know. I think there's something to his story that I would find really interesting, and I would love to spend an afternoon with him.
Okay, I get that. And the Crockett thing. You sure it's not Sonny Crockett that you're related to?
Maybe.
Do you know who Sonny Crockett
no
is? Do you even know who Sonny Crockett is?
I do.
You guys
do,
know
who
Sonny Crockett
vaguely,
is?
Vaguely
you have no
my...
idea who Sonny Crockett is. Do you ever watch Miami Vice?
Yeah.
Sonny Crockett
was
right.
Don Johnson's character. No, yeah,
that's
I would not
right.
be able to place his name.
I don't. So he's not related to Davy Crockett.
If you just said thinking, the guy in the white pants.
All Crockett's are related. It's got to be true.
Yeah. All right. Well, I love how you threw out Miami Vice. That's a big flashback to my childhood. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the acknowledgement.
Well, all right. I've got somebody. And again, don't think I'm over-spiritualizing this, but this is the best I can come up with. Because I, at my age, I want to find somebody that I can – I want to have an imaginary friend. Well, I don't want to have an imaginary friend, but based on the question, if I had to have an imaginary friend, I need to – it's got to be someone I can learn from and talk with, have discussions and ask questions. So why are you laughing? You think – you're wondering
I'm laughing because
I
have an idea of who it is, but keep going. I want to know if I'm right.
What's your idea? I'll bet you don't have a clue.
No.
What's your
idea? Keep going. No, I am not giving it away. I want to, because you could change it.
All right.
So
I'm going
to
tell you who it is. Based on, look, it's election day here. Yeah. I don't even know if I got to justify this right now, but it's election primary day here in Pennsylvania as we're recording this.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about, you know, history and where our culture's going and things I've thought about before. I would love to sit down and have some pretty serious conversations with Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
That's not who I thought. I knew that. That would be a fascinating conversation.
Well, yeah, because I try now just through things he's written. I read a little bit from him on the Psalms this morning. There's this little book on the Psalms that he wrote, very tiny little book, and it was translated. I read the translation this morning, didn't read it in German, but I would love to pick his brain on integrating faith into life in a changing cultural/political climate.
Yeah, that would be fascinating.
All right, who did you think?
I thought you were going to bypass the whole Jesus thing, but get close to Jesus and say Peter or Paul. So that's totally who I thought you were going to say. I thought, well, he's not going to say Jesus, but he'll say Peter or Paul. And so I was then, as you were setting up Dietrich, I thought, oh, he's setting up for Paul.
Yeah.
But no, that's a great call. Man, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, man, that would be an incredible – let me ask this. At what point in his life would you like to be able to – I don't know if there's – I know age was not a part of this, but there's so many different experiences that he had throughout his life. Where in his life would you love to have that opportunity to have that conversation?
I would like to track with him during the rise of Nazism and Hitler's rise to power, because I am fascinated and frightened by human nature and my German heritage. And I'm always asking the question, why did German Christians follow this guy? Why, you know, what was it that prevented them or helped them make these decisions that were just, history shows, were just crazy, you know, that why was it so easy? And there had to be reasons why, you know, and I understand a little bit of that history, but I would love to track with him, too, on resistance and what marked his thinking, you know, where he was going with that. So that's my thought on that. So, all right, that's it.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the news cultures, did either of you actually have an imaginary friend growing up, or perhaps still have an imaginary friend?
No, I didn't. I never had an imaginary friend. I don't get that. I know there are people who do. There were imaginary things in my life, but they weren't friends. They were enemies. Like, they lived in my closet or under my bed or down the hallway at night, but nothing. Did you have an imaginary friend, Jason?
Well, I don't know if it counts as an imaginary friend, but I made up imaginary scenarios that included people. So I used to, when I was in third grade, I used to stand in front of a grocery store and breakdance for money, and that is for real. And I used to make the story up that I had an entire crew back in California that was waiting for me to move out there, but I couldn't because my parents wouldn't allow me to move with them. So that was an entirely imaginary thing.
Okay.
That I would tell people when they were coming out of the grocery store.
Yeah.
And that part
of
what we were raising money for was for me to be able to go to California.
Kenton, hand me that copy of the DSM that's over on the table there. I want to look up what kind of pathology this actually is. It's a part of Jason's life here. That is... Well, that's interesting. Has that continued?
That is imaginary.
As you've gotten older. Where's your crew now?
It doesn't exist.
Okay, all right. Good. Well, all right.
Yeah.
Diagnosis complete. You've been healed. Okay.
Okay, good.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening in the world of youth culture. And before we hop into some of these articles, we know that There were a couple of deaths that we heard about last Thursday or Friday? Both Joni Lauer.
It was last Thursday.
Do you know who Joni Lauer is?
I don't. Who is Joni
Lauer? The famous wrestler, female wrestler, China. Do you still not China. Know who she is?
Yeah. I do know who China was.
WWE,
yeah.
WWF back in the day. Anyway, she died, and there's some speculation about some of the chaos in her life and how that may have or may have not contributed to that. I don't know. But the big one that everyone's talking about, certainly in Minneapolis, it's a big deal, is the sudden death of Prince at 57 years old, which, boy, it's hard to believe. You know, he was that age.
It is. Well, his music is so timeless, so it's really interesting when you have an artist like Prince and his music that just stands out over time. You don't necessarily put an age to the artist, and he's an icon. I mean, for me, I know that you speak a lot about the Beatles, but for me, I was a child of the 80s, so Michael Jackson, Madonna, Prince, these were individuals that were on the charts when I was growing up. There's was the music I would listen to. I remember watching MTV and watching When Doves Cry and Purple Rain and the videos that were really setting the stage for MTV during its first few years. I mean, Purple Rain, I felt like, was on constantly. And same with when Doves Cry. Like, I remember over and over and over again just hearing his music. And the impact that had. I mean, I remember, and we were talking about imaginary friends, but I remember playing guitar like Prince. And so these were individuals that had a huge influence on me when I was a young kid.
All right, let's clarify that right there. Playing guitar like Prince. He was an extremely talented musician. Are you talking about played the guitar like Prince, or are we talking air guitar here?
I'm air guitar.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to clarify that because that's amazing.
Those are two different things.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, well, let me ask you a question on that. As a child of the 80s, and that's neat that you went back to, you know, in the 60s, 70s, when I'm thinking about music and the Beatles and other bands, that when I hear them, it takes me back. Do you think for most people in the 80s, to teenagers who grew up in the 80s, music fans who were young and coming of age in the 1980s, that was it Prince's talent? Was it the entertainment? Because he was certainly, he really stretched, you know, the boundaries in terms of entertainment, or was there something else to his music that really connected with that generation? I'm asking you as part of that.
Yeah.
Was there a message? Was there something in his lyrics that kept you there, trying to move us on to something else here? So, but answer that question. Ignore the bell.
Yeah. Well, I have to say
that was my imaginary friend who rang that. I don't know if you heard it or not. But.
I figure that's who it was. You know, I was all of it. I mean, he was an entertainer first and foremost. I just think he was a brilliant entertainer. I think his talent was just as equal to his entertainment. Just like Michael Jackson, I think the two of them, you watch videos outside of what they did and you just realize how incredibly talented these individuals were. They were brilliant when it
very
came
artistic.
To music.
Yeah, very artistic.
Very artistic. But I would say that the thing that separated Prince from any of the others was how he would sing about his sexuality in ways that was different than any other artist in the 80s, maybe Madonna. But then he would include spirituality, which I think Madonna did some of, but I think Prince did an even better job. I almost felt like he was calling a church service, like when Let's Go or Party Like It's 1999, like those songs. I mean, they were really meant to almost be a church service. So there was this aspect of spirituality and sexuality that I look back on his music now and can see the influence. I don't know if I quite understood it like that in the 80s, but I definitely saw it as being different. I saw it definitely being both hypersexual and also hyperspiritual. Just even the visuals that you saw in some of his videos when I was younger stood out to me. So I wouldn't have said that then that's what the way I thought about it, but I think that that's why he had such a tremendous influence, is how he crossed so many genres and so many different barriers that we often don't want to cross, especially in music.
Yeah, and I think the response, the outpouring of attention and grief that you're seeing in the news over his death is indicative of the fact that his music was incredibly meaningful to whole large groups of people. So, yeah. Well, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about the news, and let's do this. Let's try to do this as quickly as we can. The guys have their hand on the bell, this 2-minute drill we do. And Jason, what have you got? Give us something out of the gate that's from culture.
Yeah, well, this one is definitely at the forefront of a lot of conversation. We're seeing a lot of conversation around the bills in North Carolina and then Target and the way that gender neutrality is making its way into the conversation nationally. But Merriam-Webster just added cisgender and genderqueer to its dictionary. One of the things that they find with cisgender is, in the way that they describe it, cis is a C-I-S and then gender, G-E-N-D-E-R. And it's of relating to or being a person whose gender identity corresponds with the sex the person had or was identified as having at birth. So I'm assuming that that's meaning male-female. But instead of saying male-female, now we've gone to cisgender. And then genderqueer, which is of relating to or being a person whose gender identity cannot be categorized as solely male or female. And what was said in this article is the additions reflect on how society is expanding its discussions over gender identity, gender expression, and transgender issues. And we have created this, I don't know if it's a Pandora's box or everything within the conversation around gender is up for grabs. It has become so complex, or we've made it so complex, that there's really no room for black and white. And I don't know about you, but I get very confused with the number of ways that we are choosing to describe an individual. We are placing so many different identities on one individual rather than the identity that you and I talk about, which is an identity in Christ. And I know that sometimes we get beat up for that because that makes it so simple, but it's what we find as believers, as followers of Christ. So it's an interesting change. And even at the very end of the article, it says, its additions show the vocabulary we use for gender is changing, but there's still a lot more change likely to come, is what this article says. And I find the way in which we deal with this is going to determine the way in which we attach sexual ethic, attach our Christian sexual ethic to these conversations in the future. And so we have to be really cognizant of the fact that how we talk about this now is going to influence how generations are going to talk about it after us.
Yeah, and I think it's a dangerous thing to just go, oh, this is changing times. This is just ridiculous. I mean, think what you will about it, right or wrong, but we have to take note of it. We can't just sweep it off to the side. This is, in being an effective cross-cultural missionary, called to reach this Absolutely. Changing culture with the unchanging message of the gospel. We need to track with these things. And by the way, we always say, you know, it's becoming more and more significant what words are deleted from the dictionary every year, what words are added. So we'll continue to track with that. Here's let me shift gears here. And there's some research coming out of Michigan State University right now where they've been tracking with students for several years now, actually for well over a decade. It's actually teenagers ages or kids ages 12 up to 24 who over the course of this time have taken part in government surveys on drug use and health. And they're discovering a trend where girls, teenage girls in the United States, are now starting to drink alcohol sooner than boys do. And researchers are concerned because this is obviously a public health issue, a personal health issue. It can lead to all kinds of problems in the now and then also down the road in the future. And they're trying to figure out what are some of the explanations for this. Drinking has become more socially acceptable in our culture, where if you stop and just look at that issue, that gives us some clear guidance on, as parents and youth workers, the fact that we need to be talking about a biblical theology of substance abuse. This is something that, where do we find that? Well, there's a book I wrote called Youth Culture 101. There's a chapter in there on being under the influence, so talking about drugs and alcohol. There's actually a section in there where I talk about developing a biblical theology of substance abuse, the rightness, the wrongness, you know, how do we build borders and boundaries there? So That's a way to begin to look at that. Also, girls are another reason would be girls are reaching puberty sooner, so they start engaging in risky behaviors earlier. Younger girls are spending time with older boys, so there's more exposure to drinking. And then also, a lot of these colorful fruit-flavored drinks are being targeted to kids. So, long story short, research still says that men have greater alcohol problems than women do, but it looks like the scales are starting to balance a little bit more. So, again, start to talk about these things at a young age. This is a very real issue. We don't wait till there's problems. We address the problems prophetically and preventively beforehand because we want to prevent our kids from going down that road. What do you got, Jason?
Well, the next article is speaking specifically about Columbine and some of the other mass shootings that have happened over the last several decades. But the title of the article, Damaged Masculinity May Help Explain Columbine and Other Mass Shootings. And one of the individuals that is cited in the article speaks about how damaged masculinity might explain why some of the different attacks and some of the different shootings may have taken place. The gentleman's name is Langman. Langman had the idea called damaged masculinity. And he says that it's something that could have been overlooked. But it's not just overlooked in the Columbine case, but in many of the other shootings that have taken place. He essentially argues was Harris, one of the shooters in the Columbine incident, was born with a birth defect in his leg, had a chest deformity that required surgeries just before high school. And he had noticed he had a noticeable sunken chest, but his hopes were to follow his father into the military, so to be a tough guy, a Marine. Realities were probably not to be realized. And so he reasons that guns were the thing that gave him control. And the other example was the shooting that took place at the University of California, Santa Barbara, with the individual that was labeled as the Kissless Virgin. And he notes that one of the things that that shooter said was, after I picked up the handgun, I brought it back to my room and felt a new sense of power. I was now armed. Now, who was the alpha male? And I find this highly interesting, only in the sense that as we have more and more conversations like that first article about the changing idea of what masculinity, what gender identity is, I think that one of the things I almost wonder if these are some of the things that have formed where we are today, that have impacted the way that we discuss things like masculinity and femininity. And it's really interesting that we are now looking back in hindsight and asking questions around masculinity. This is something that we have to be really careful with how we discuss in the schools, and it was never something we had to be careful about. And I think that we have to be asking questions, good questions, about how we're speaking, how we're using language, because it informs the way that we're teaching our kids. And this, I think, is proof of that. I think it's one of those things that stands out as something that we have to be aware of.
So as culture watchers, we want to watch what, the gender definitions are in terms of what is the masculine ideal, what is the feminine ideal, and push back on those when they stretch the borders and boundaries beyond ways that the scriptures would tell us to be male and female. And again, there's a lot of debate about guns, but in some circles, this is what defines masculinity. And we need to push back on that. Well, let's stay on this topic in terms of male and female. And there is some new news out now about suicide rates climbing here in the United States across all ages, but especially among the adolescent girl population. So the suicide rate between 1999 and 2014 has risen by a quarter. And then also, if you look at the one age group of girls between the ages of 10 and 14, this is where the most marked increase is. Though they make up only a very small portion of the total suicides, the rate in that group has jumped the most over that time period, 1999 to 2014, experiencing the largest percentage increase, tripling over 15 years. And we need to take note of this and watch this. You know, one of the things that we've talked about before is what's happening on the college campus. And when you track what's happening in the health centers on the college campus, you can see what some of the issues are. It's interesting and sad that people don't go in for, hey, I cut myself, I need a Band-Aid, or I need to be stitched up. Even with sexually transmitted diseases, it's not something that's at the top of the list that you would expect to be happening on a college campus. It is mental health issues. So things like anxiety, things like stress, things like depression, that's what's off the charts. That's what heads the list. And so we see a declining health, a declining mental and spiritual health, which should prompt us to go back and pull back the layers. We're going to do this a little bit later because I think social media definitely has something to do with this. Pull back the layers of the onion, say, hey, what's at the cause of this? And we're, you know, when it all becomes about body image, when it all becomes about our identity on social media, when it all becomes about the likes, we are going to be more anxious. We are going to be more stressed. We are going to get more depressed. And you're going to have more and more people who think that it's going to be better for me, easier for me to take my own life than to continue to live my life as it is. So we've got a lot of work to do on talking to our kids about where to find hope.
Yeah. Well, the next article that I came across was just on the idea of parenting in today's age. And I thought the setup for this article was perfect. It said summer 1974, and it says, I'm 9 years old. By 7:30 a.m., I'm up and out of the house. Or if it's Saturday, I'm up and doing exactly what my father has told me to do, raking, mowing, digging holes, or washing cars. And I don't know about you, but that was exactly like my childhood. But then it fast forwards to summer 2016, and it says, I'm tiptoeing, that this is the parent, out of the house on my way to work in an effort not to wake my children, who will undoubtedly sleep until 11 a.m. They may complete a couple of chores I've listed on the kitchen counter for them, or they may eat stale Cheez-Its in order to stay in their rooms and avoid the kitchen at all costs so they don't see the list. And I found this article highly fascinating, especially as a new parent. I think about the ways that my parents have raised me, and then I think about the news that we find happening in our culture today. Parents really, in a lot of ways, are being beat up for things that our parents used to always do. And like allowing our kids to go down to the park a block or two away and then being labeled as bad parents because you let your kids go play.
Or child abuse, even.
Or child abuse.
Abusers, we go
to a whole nother extent. Or how could you make your kid do all those chores and all you're asking them to do is mow the lawn? And there is a dramatic change in what's happened. And I see this then also impacting students when they make their way to college. The article highlights this, but I remember my wife who worked on, still works at a college campus, is a counselor in at a college here in Spokane. But then before that, we both lived in a dorm. She was a resident director of a dorm. And how many parents would call about issues such as the toilet's not working in the stall? They would call, even though they live in another state, on behalf of their kid. And so I think that one of the things that we're finding is that there is going to have to be a real change, or we're going to find a very entitled generation. We already are seeing some of that.
Yep.
But how
yep.
we parent, we really need to be thinking, what are we modeling when we're parenting? What are we setting up? What kind of things are we communicating, especially as followers of Christ in our home?
Yeah, I actually posted this article on my Facebook page. It's titled, Are Today's Parents Getting a Raw Deal? It's by Rhonda Stevens. It was on the Huffington Post website, and I posted it just because I thought it was great, and it made some great points, but I wanted to see what the pushback might be, and I was pleased to see the number of young parents and youth workers who clicked on it, read it, and then responded and commented and said, oh, yeah, this is happening. So, you know, what's happened to self-organized play? What's happened to the development of the imagination? And when we get to the point where parents who say, go play outside and come home for dinner, and they get accused of child abuse, or that's now called free-range parenting, and it's criticized, there's issues here. And just having this discussion makes me feel, as I did when I first read it, incredibly old. Because that's how much culture has changed. But it's a good article. We recommend folks. We'll put the link up to this. Click on this. Give it a read. It's got a lot of fodder discussion, especially for young parents. Don't say what you're going to say. What?
Well, no, I was going to say it makes me feel old.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I am old. Yeah.
So no, no, I wasn't going to comment on that. But when I read an article like this, it makes me feel just as old, because I remember these things. And I think of what it's like to raise two sons right now and how I would love for these things to take place. Yeah. And so I want to affirm it also made me feel
old. Oh, good, good, good. Well, the rate of change is really, really picking up. So let's keep tracking with these things. Well, a last article here, and this will be I can't say it's going to be a good segue, but maybe an effective segue in what we're going to talk about after the break. And this was a news story that broke last week that is really, really alarming. You know, we've talked about the abuse of social media before. We've talked about the way that narcissism without a moral compass is playing itself out in what people are choosing to show and tell on social media. So last week, this 18-year-old high school student at New Albany High School outside of Columbus, Ohio, her name's Marina Lonina, but it's like a tongue twister there to say it, but Marina Lonina, she actually live-streamed a sexual assault of a 17-year-old friend, a sexual assault by a 29-year-old perpetrator who had invited him over to their place, and they drank a little too much. He proceeds to sexually assault Lonina's 17-year-old friend. And Lonina, as she's done with so many things, basically live streams the whole sexual assault on the app called Periscope, where you're able to live stream video. So she was broadcasting this out to the world. And it's horrifying to think that she didn't step in and try to stop. I mean, there's so many things at work here and at play here, but she didn't step in and stop this. She and the perpetrator, Raymond Gates, 29 years old, have both been arrested, have both been held on bail, are both facing multiple charges, as they should, including rape, kidnapping, sexual battery, and pandering sexually oriented material involving a minor. Each of them, if convicted, faces up to 40 years in prison. So on the one hand, this is an example of social media gone crazy, fueled by narcissism and the lack of borders and boundaries and a knowledge of right and wrong, you know, that moral compass. And at the same time, it's showing us how when we can't police ourselves, the real growth industry in our culture right now is law enforcement and the legal system. And it's frightening to think about that this is where we're going. And I don't know. To do this, she probably didn't know she was doing anything wrong. So I just wonder. I mean, I don't know. I wonder if there was this when she was arrested. What are you arresting me for? What did I do? Is it what, you know, no idea that anything improper, immoral, illegal, just totally wrong was even taking place. And this is why we need to start to talk about social media and how we use it, because there are right ways to use it and there are wrong ways to use it. We're going to talk about that. When we come back from the break, Jason and I are going to have a conversation about kids and social media, and we're going to get very practical at the end where we look at ways that parents and youth workers can begin to show and tell kids how to use social media to the glory of God, as we share some guidelines and some rules that we've set in our own lives to help us do this to the glory of God. So stay with us, and we'll be right back after this break. In an effort to help you help the kids you know and love navigate the difficult landscape of the emerging digital frontier to the glory of God, we've launched a Digital Kids Initiative here at CPYU. Thanks to a generous grant from a company called DAS, you can access our Digital Kids Initiative and a growing number of free resources and downloads by visiting the website at digitalkidsinitiative.com. This is one more way that we're helping you lead your kids to live lives where their faith in God is integrated into the growing amount of time they're spending with social media and technology. Welcome back, everybody, to Youth Culture Matters. It's Walt Mueller here with Jason Sochenik. And during the break, Jason admitted that he thought Sonny Crockett was a rhythm and blues singer from the 1960s. So thanks, Jason, for letting us know that. That is...
I do what I can.
Cultural artifacts squared away in terms of your memory and your cultural artifact museum. So
But doesn't that sound like a great rhythm and blues artist from the 60s?
It does.
Sonny Crockett.
I see where that can happen.
Live, yeah. live with
Tubbs.
With Tubbs?
Yeah, Tubbs was the other guy, right, on Miami Vice? Wasn't Tubbs, Sonny Crockett, and Tubbs? Okay.
Wasn't I don't know, but was it Tubbs?
I think it was.
I think it was something
Google
else.
Google that, Kenton, and let us know.
I don't know about that.
Tubbs and Crockett, yeah.
But Jimmy Cash and Sonny Crockett, that sounds like a great, like, or Jimmy, not Johnny Crash. Johnny, man.
Johnny Crash?
I am bad today.
Yeah, you are.
Johnny Cash. I said Jimmy Cash. Wow, I am.
Tubbs is right.
Tubbs is correct. Yes.
Tubbs is correct.
Tubbs
so
is
there
correct.
You go. Yeah,
Tubbs and Crockett. All right.
There are some things stored away in the file cabinets in my head.
So well, you were a bit older than I was in the 80s, so you remember these things
you
much better
that.
Than I do.
You got to remember that. Well, yeah.
I mean, you were probably in your 40s and the 80s or something.
Okay, let's move on. No. We came out of that last, or we went into that last break talking about a really alarming story that brings together so many cultural forces and waves. The story out of Ohio with the Periscope live streaming of a sexual assault by one teenager, the sexual assault of her friend by an older gentleman who was 29 years old. And Jason, we've talked a lot about social media here. We're concerned about social media here, and that's really what I want to talk about today. I want to have a discussion with you about social media and some of the things we're learning that are important to pass on to parents and youth workers, so that we can instill in our kids a good sense of how to use social media Christianly, you know, to the glory of God.
Yeah, I think it's really important, because I think that a lot of the resources that Center for Parent Youth Understanding bring to the forefront are, well, top-notch, and I think that they provide conversations that aren't always happening. In fact, one of the things that CPYU has developed is the Digital Kids Initiative. So I would love for you, Walt, to talk a little bit about what that is and the impact you're hoping for it to have.
Right, right. And it's such an important thing that we actually birthed a whole website dedicated to issues related to social media and technology that we call our Digital Kids Initiative, and it's at digitalkidsinitiative.com. We birthed this whole website to help youth workers and parents help kids navigate this new landscape. I like to refer to it, and this is not original to us, as the digital frontier. It's new. And just like when the Wild West was being settled and the settlers moved from the eastern part of the United States to the western part of the United States, every step took them into new territory. And there were things that had never been seen before. There were dangers that had never been encountered before. There was disease. There was heartache. There was brokenness. There was great excitement as well. And I think that this frontier that we're on now, this digital frontier, is much like that. So we're navigating uncharted territory. And I think it's important for us right out of the gate to say, every step I'm going to take here, I don't want to take it haphazardly. I don't want to run into this, you know, willy-nilly without forethought or without borders and boundaries. But I'm going to take deliberate steps here and work to do this to the glory of God. So the Digital Kids Initiative is really about that, and it's an online place where we have lots of resources, lots of things to download. I know Miguel's here in with us right now. Miguel's our bilingual intern. He's been working over the last few months on translating some of the helpful handouts that are there, including a Family Digital Covenant of Conduct into Spanish, so that those who have that as their language can access that. We're seeing those things, by the way, get a lot of traffic and a lot of downloads. Even there's actually a website in Mexico that's linked onto this, and so we've seen a lot of traffic with that. But we're just trying to help people navigate this well. I find that, you know, we need to be asking two questions. The first, and this is what the Digital Kids Initiative is about. The first question is, what is social media and technology doing to us and to our kids? By and large, we're not paying attention to that, and we don't figure out that that stuff has shaped us until after it's done the shaping. And it can shape us in good ways, and it can shape us in bad ways. So we want to know how it's shaping us. You know, Marshall McLuhan, that great social or media critic, and I think we can apply what he said about media 50 years ago to the new frontier of social media and technology. He said, basically, you know, first we shape our tools, and then our tools shape us. And they shape us totally. I mean, no area of life is left untouched. And so what we need to do is, as we take a new tool, into our hands and integrated into our lives, we need to be thinking about what will this do to us? What's the good? What's the bad? And we need to celebrate the good, and we need to work to use things in a way that prevents the bad or keeps us from, on the digital frontier, taking steps into those pits, let's say, those unforeseen obstacles that can do damage. So, you know, that's the first question. What is social media and technology doing to us and to our kids? And I think there's a second question we need to ask as well, and that is, what am I doing with social media and technology for myself and for my kids? So if I have a responsibility as a parent to nurture my children from childhood into a spiritually, physically, and emotionally healthy adulthood, I've got to deal with social media. If I'm a youth worker and I want to teach my kids in my youth group what it means to follow Jesus in all areas of life, well, one of those all areas of life is the area of social media, so I want to deal with that. So that's what the Digital Kids Initiative is all about.
I think that one of the things that's so great about what CPYU does, and it's the reason that we've partnered with the work that you're doing, is the way in which it integrates all of our faith, our core beliefs, into each and every aspect of life. So integrating life, our spirituality or our faith, into the life that we live. And so I'm really curious how that applies to something like social media.
Yeah.
One of the things you said at the very, I mean, it's one of the two things, but maybe going a little bit further with
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
What does that look like? What are some of the thoughts that you have as you think of integration?
Yeah, and I like that word integration, and I'm glad you asked that question, Jason, because really our faith is about, you know, Jesus calls us to come and follow. And it's not our choice to come and follow in certain areas of life and not follow in other areas of life. So we use the word integration. What that means is that our faith or our following of Jesus is woven in and through, as Abraham Kuyper said, every square inch of our lives. No portion of our lives should be left untouched. And this is, you know, this is a lifelong venture to try to get to that point, to work prayerfully and obediently under the guidance of the Holy Spirit to do this. But, you know, every square inch of our lives, or as I like to say, every nook and cranny of our lives. Now, I don't think social media and technology is a nook and cranny. I think it's a big chunk of life right now, especially when you look at the amount of time that not just all people, but especially the emerging generations are spending engaged with social media. Pew Internet and Life Project says that 80% of a teenager's online time is spent engaging with social media. That's actually a statistic that's a few years old. I don't know if it's – I'm guessing that it's fair to say that it might actually be more time than that now. You know, kids are sleeping with their phones, and they're engaging with social media overnight. And so what we want to do is say, you know, how do I bring honor and glory to God with that? And that's, I think, a key question. You know, if you go to the Scriptures and you look at the Scriptures, you'll see – that in Romans 12, you know, the first couple of verses, Paul talks to the Romans about, again, every area of life, an integrated faith, but that the way we live every minute of our lives counterculturally is actually an act of worship. So a good way of thinking of it is that when I pick up my phone and I have my smartphone in my hand, and whether it's a phone call, a text, a social media post, where I go on the internet, that is an act of worship. I am worshiping someone or something. I could be worshiping technology. I could be worshiping the kingdom or the prince of darkness in the way I use that. Or I can be consciously working to integrate my faith into this area of my life and actually worship God and bring honor and glory to the glory of God, to flourish as I was meant to flourish, as God's made me as a human being, and to extend God's kingdom reign over this area of my life, and even work to propagate that kingdom in the world as I use social media. So that's important. But also, you know, going into 1 Corinthians 10:31, I mean, this is familiar to all of us as well. If you eat or you drink or if you do anything, do it for the glory of God. And so to me, those are just some guidelines. And let me say this as well. When we think about the digital frontier, and walking into this unknown territory, I like to think about Proverbs 22:3. There's some great wisdom there where it says, the prudent sees dangers and hides himself or herself, but the simple go on and suffer for it. And to me, that says to me clearly, and I think it should say to all of us, and this is something we need to instill in our parenting, in our ministries, and into our own families, even into our own lives, obviously, is step slowly, step cautiously. You know, you hike a lot, right? I mean, you've encountered some crazy dangers as you've been hiking, and, you know, you want to watch out, watch where your foot's going to land. You know, is there going to be an obstacle there? Is there going to be a snake there? Is it, you know, what's going to be there? And so we want to move slowly. So that's a simple statement about that. And unfortunately, you know, nowhere do you turn to the scriptures. There's no one book of the Bible. There's nowhere in the Bible where it says, okay, you know, here's Paul's letter to so-and-so where he talks specifically about social media. What we have to do is translate the principles that we read in the scriptures and translate them into our lives and into the lives of our kids, apply them to that. So a great question about integration.
Well, I mean, going even a little bit further then with integration and then the words that you use were step slowly, which I think are such wise words. But even when you step slowly, there can be things that happen, things that occur. And I'm really curious what concerns you might have, not so much with integration, obviously, but with social media, there are so many. It's a digital frontier, so it's still being explored. And then there are things that we already know through experiences. So I'm really curious what concerns you have when it comes to the use of social media, both as Christians, but then also as everyday users outside of the context of our own faith.
Yeah. And I would say, too, that these dangers and concerns spread widely across the age spectrum. So they're not unique to any one particular age. Now, some people may have a bent towards certain habits or certain pitfalls, you know, certain dangers and obstacles as opposed to others, and that's where we have to know the personalities of our kids. But I think we need to look in the mirror as well. So one of the things we've done with the Digital Kids Initiative is identify what we call blessings and curses. And, you know, the blessings would be things like well, you know, there's a whole list that we have, but I'll just throw some out. I mean, the ability now to do research. I mean, it's just helped us so much here at CPYU. The ability to reach out to a larger audience. I mean, even a podcast is made possible because of digital media and technology. We couldn't do this 10 years ago, so it's an amazing thing for us to be able to do this. You know, communication. Take, for example, just missions. If you want to expose your children or your youth group to a missionary, to be able to Skype or to connect and have real-time interaction, live interaction with someone instead of, you know, I remember my parents getting letters from missionaries in these little lightweight blue-colored airmail envelopes that would take sometimes a month or 2 months to go from one continent back here to the U.S. I mean, communication was so slow. So it's astounding to me the blessings that are there. But there's so many curses. And let me focus on those. And I'll just list a few for you here because you asked for this. Okay. So it feeds narcissism, that self-love, or it becomes all about us. Some people have said as well that, and I think the research is right on about this, and we see this, that social media, especially with our kids, is all about forming an identity. So there's many more options for identity. The peer group in terms of how they use social media is shaping the borders and boundaries for identity. This is where I'm going to go to find my identity. So matters of body image and appearance are just so important. And so we morph ourselves. And when I say we, I mean adults do this as well as kids. But we morph ourselves into what we think the market wants. And that's how we present ourselves, which is not really how we are, which, again, leads to something else. And that's not only adopting a false identity and not presenting ourselves honestly, but that cuts down Christian community and vulnerability, which is a real concern. And, you know, I need to be vulnerable with you. You need to know me as I am. And if social media allows me to present myself as I'm not, then it's mediating that in ways that are just not good. And so when I walk into the room with you in real time, kids come into youth group or kids come into church, I can't be who I am. And so Christian community breaks down. So we have that. Cyberbullying. You know, it's taken bullying to a new extreme. Stewardship of time. When we become consumed with spending time with our devices and posting things and telling everyone things. I mean, it's just insane how much time we spend. The loss of sleep as we sleep with phones and don't want to miss out on anything. The distraction that exists. We cannot multitask. The research points to that. And you can't do two things well at once. It's broken into our relationships. You know, Sherry Turkle's book, Alone Together. We are together in close proximity, but when we're all engaged with our screens, we're actually alone. So simple thing, the breakdown of family. The families may be together, but they're not really interacting. It's changed the way we read. It's redefined sexuality. You and I have talked about pornography. So these are all some of the things that we need to be concerned about. And that's where, on the Digital Kids Initiative, we unpack some of that. A lot of that.
Well, I'm really glad you even brought up the aspect of pornography, which we'll circle back around to after the break. I do want to make a distinction that you've done here, which is expanded the definition of social media for some of us. So social media, oftentimes we only think of Facebook and Twitter and maybe Snapchat, but really it's vast. You brought in the conversation of Skype and other tools that we can use our phones for. So I'm really glad that you brought that in as you're talking both about the blessings and the curses. And after the break, which we'll take here in a second, I really want for us to continue this conversation as it relates maybe to sexuality and our identities, which is something else that you brought up, which I think are two crucial conversations that we need to have as we have a conversation around social media. So we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back after the break.
Here at CPYU, we want to help you help parents stay up to date on today's youth culture. One of our most popular resources is our monthly parent page. This four-page, full-color resource offers parents a timely, practical look into current youth culture trends, along with resources to help them parent their children and teens Christianly in today's rapidly changing youth culture. If you're a youth worker who would like to get this monthly resource into the hands of your parents, you can see a sample parent page and learn more by visiting cpyuparentpage.com.
Welcome back to the CPYU podcast. I'm Jason Sochnik here interviewing Walt Mueller. I got to flip the script a little bit today and have him be on the interview seat. And we've been talking about social media, its impact, the Digital Kids Initiative. And before we left for the break, one of the things we had began the conversation on was around sexuality, pornography, and social media's influence on it. And I actually want to have a conversation around that. So Walt, I know that you've done a lot of work specifically around selfies and what it curates and its impact on these topics. And so I would love to hear from you what the selfie has done and is doing to conversations around sexuality, conversations around pornography, conversations around masculinity and femininity. So I would love for you to share some of what you and I have talked about here.
Right. So I think what social media has done is change the way that we access role models and how often we access role models, which in turn shape who we desire to become. So, for example, you know, when I'm growing up, again, I'll sound old here. You know, I've got a role model who's, let's say, a baseball player. I know very little about that guy's personal life, but my way of accessing this role model would be through, and I'm just throwing this out as one example, but through my baseball card collection, through a series of baseball magazines, and then through watching this particular player play, you know, as I'm able to see games, which wasn't every game, by the way, back then. You know, televised games were pretty much only on weekends and maybe every now and then on a weeknight. So how it's changed now is limited access has gone to total access, 24/7 access, in a world where there is jockeying for all the attention. So in other words, what I think now is shaping kids and the way they form their identity and their beliefs and their behaviors about sexuality and just about everything else in life is based on this glut of role models who are constantly accessible, constantly in our face, and in fact aren't even at a distance anymore, but we come to believe that if we follow them on Twitter, they are now our friend and we're interacting because there's back and forth, or, you know, on Facebook or Instagram or whatever it is. So there's this sense now of these are my friends. These are people who are actually in my life. There's this belief that they may even know who I am. You know, we have this personal contact. So you've got this constant interaction. So that's upped it quite a bit. And what it's done is it's shaped not only how we seek our identities and then try on different identities for size through what one social media critic has called the identity fitting room of social media, where selfies are like going into the fitting room, coming out and presenting ourselves and saying, hey, does this fit? And then going back in, you know, yes, no, the likes and so forth. But it's also, you know, it's shaping everything. So let me back up a minute and say that it's we seek fame and celebrity, and that's what we see in selfies and in social media postings. Kids are trying to get a following. So you start a YouTube channel. So, and we've talked about this before, the TV show Little Big Shots. How many of these people come on with Steve Harvey, who he says to these 4 and 5 year old kids who have done nothing but put up a YouTube video that's gone viral, and it's typically been a mom or dad who's done that, they're doing something cute or obnoxious. You know, now we're going to, you know, do you know how many followers you have? Do you know what it means to go viral? Do you know what it means to, you know, I have 2 million people who have looked at my YouTube video. So it's the celebrities that shape us, and it shapes our desire to seek celebrity. So that influences how we do our selfies and curating ourselves. And then it's even pornography. We would say pornography is played into that because when you look at the postings and when you look at how kids are posing, you see mirror images of what they've seen through this world of pornography that's now totally accessible, totally anonymous, almost totally affordable because most of it's free, and that's come together to shape all this. So let me just summarize it this way. You've got kids who are now fabricating, curating, and promoting themselves. Let me give you those three terms again. A fabricator is one who fabricates or manufactures something. It's one who makes a fabrication of something. The dictionary says it's a counterfeiter or a falsifier. So when I fabricate myself on social media, I'm putting out there what I think people want to see, what I think will sell, what I think will get the likes, you know, the social capital of the likes, what I think, and it's not the real me. The curation part is, the dictionary says, one who has the care and superintendence of something, one in charge of a museum, a zoo, or other place of exhibit. So we're exhibiting ourselves, and we're adjusting the furniture. We're moving things around to get the most people to walk through our exhibit. This is what a museum curator does. And so everything's pushed towards not pleasing God. As a Christian, I have to say that, but it's more towards pleasing the audience and getting the likes. And then the last word, the promoter is a person or organization that helps something to happen, develop, or increase. And we see how that works. So kids are, based on what they're seeing from their role models, who are celebrities, and what they're seeing in pornography, which shapes how they will present themselves, let's just say visually, with a selfie. Now we enter into the world of social media and we say, my teenage years are about finding my identity, and the way I'm going to do that is by fabricating, curating, and promoting myself. Does that make sense? I mean, that's a lot that I threw at you right there, but that's what's happening with this. And then there's a lot of results from that, obviously.
We'll talk a little bit about the results because, I mean, with regards to fabricating, curating, and then promoting, I mean, it's really interesting as you talk about that because I think of celebrities that have become celebrities specifically of this process. I think Kardashians are a perfect example of this happening. And then now teens, young adults, and I would even say adults modeling exactly what the Kardashians have done.
Yeah, yeah.
So talk about, I mean, I think there's something within this that might even be about unmet needs.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is it that is happening within this?
Sure.
That's communicating something about our unmet needs?
Yeah, well, we've been made for relationship. We've been made by God for a relationship with God. that's broken. And because of sin in the world, we've been made for relationship with family and with other human beings. Because of sin in the world, that's broken. So, and the brokenness, the relational brokenness, expresses itself in so many different ways. Kids desire to be in a relationship with the one who created them. Because of sin, that relationship's been broken. Of course, we know, theologically speaking, as we read through the grand story of the scriptures, you know, creation, fall, redemption, restoration, that redemption only comes, the redemption that we hunt for only comes through our relationship with Jesus Christ, the Redeemer. And when we don't have that, and even when we do, we still yearn to be liked. We still yearn to be loved. And so all these horrible, fallen, broken expressions are the avenues that we pursue in our ignorance, and they only lead to a dead end. And as a result, up the ante on this cycle continuing, and it becomes, you know, more and more difficult. So you mentioned the Kardashians, okay, perfect example. What are they famous for? I mean, nobody knows. Paris Hilton before them. What was she famous for? And if you double back and find out what they're famous for, what did they all do? They posted sex tapes.
Yes.
And so there you have pornography right there. And now kids are going, I need to be as famous as Kim Kardashian. I need to be as famous as so-and-so, you know, whoever it is. And we find out that you curate your own fame. You pursue your own fame by this whole process of curation and fabrication and promotion. Now, let me go to your question, all right, because I think this is where it gets really frightening. So a basic statement that I don't think kids could verbalize, but their use of social media says this loud and clear, is this: I am defined by my appearance and what it looks like to others. I'm defined by my appearance and what it looks like to others. And that's what really pushes their use of social media. And so you have kids at young developmental ages where they believe everything they see, everything they hear, where they want people to like them. They want to try this. So you have 10, 11, 12-year-old kids who are posting extremely sexual, almost pornographic images. And you have guys who are asking girls for this. So let me break it down, all right? I actually developed this little scheme of curation standards, and I compare boys to girls. So let me give it to you real quick. So for the boys, it's all about physicality. So you want to pose with ripped abs, you know, think about the cover of Men's Health and other magazines. And just Google men's magazine covers. You see the physicality there, all right? So that's the standard that they're trying to live up to. For the girls, it's not so much physicality as it is sexuality. Google image search women's magazine covers, and you'll start to see this. What you see is various states of undress and all posed in ways that have been defined and shaped by what we see in pornography. You go back to the boys, and you see that it's all about hypermasculinity. For the girls, it's about hypersexuality. For the boys, it's about dominance. You know, the male needs to be the dominant one sexually. For the girls, it's about submissiveness. And this is where I go back to what Nancy Jo Sale says in the first few words of her book, American Girls. You know, that she recounts a social media interchange where a young teenage 13-year-old guy initiates it with a 13-year-old girl, and his request is simply two words: send nudes. So he's asking her to sext him, all right, which leads to the last thing here. So that's dominant submissiveness. So what we come to is, for the boys, it's all about demand. He was demanding. And for the girls, it's about supply. She needs to deliver. And I think what's happening is there's this snowball effect of this, where kids are growing up and coming into adolescence believing this is what it means to be human. This is how I'm supposed to conduct myself. This is what's expected of me, and this is what I'm going to do. And it's horrible, because most of this, both sets of standards, in many ways, are shaped by what they see depicted in pornography. And that was basically your question, I think, that we see this. And so this is where we need to begin to step in and teach our kids that yourself, your identity, is not about appearance. It's not about sexuality. It's about who you are in Christ. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it mean to see yourself as a human being created with value and dignity and worth in the image of God. Go back to the garden, see what it means to flourish, and then define for our kids very clearly, this is an expression of our brokenness, this is not. And you use social media examples of this to show them this. And does this make sense?
It makes perfect sense. In fact, one of the things I'm just even curious about, if it is this simple, because you said this at the very end, I mean, you did a great job of laying out for males, it's physicality, females, it's sexuality, and I really hope those that are listening to this podcast catch that. But one of the last things you said is demand for males and supply for females. Do you think it's as simple as teaching men, boys, about the dynamic of how we need to change what we demand, removing that, or women, females, removing the dynamic of supply? Or maybe it's one or the other, or maybe it's both, but do you think simple conversations around some of that could actually have a tremendous influence on some of what we see, even within our own youth group?
Yeah, I think so, because the culture is teaching demand and supply. The culture is teaching these things 24/7. Everything they see, everything they hear, for the most part, is pointing to that. Rarely are they going to see and hear on the internet or as they engage with media or even in the peer group. And unfortunately for many kids in the home, rarely are they going to see and hear any message that pushes back on that. So this is where I think we need to call it out. You know, Jesus did that. You have heard it said that. And then he would go to, but I tell you. So he would say, you know, here's the cultural reality. Here's what people believe. Here's how you're being taught to live and conduct yourself. But here's a different way of looking at it. Here's a different way of thinking about it. Here's a different way of seeing it and living it. And when he lays out the kingdom realities, that's what we need to do. And this is where, and use the scriptures to do that, because this is where we trust God's Spirit, as is promised in the scriptures, to do the work of the Spirit and bring change. And it may take a lot of time. That's the reality, because these cultural messages are so pervasive, so compelling, so attractive, that we really need to be constantly pushing back. And I think we model how we use social media does that, as well as the words that we use. So if you're a mom, you don't want to be living through your kids, vicariously through your kids on social media. You don't want to be posting a new selfie every day or two or three new selfies every day. Because what you're saying is, you know, look at it this way. I mean, this is so ridiculous. Yeah. Would you walk up to a human being, another human being, and hand them a picture of yourself and say, hey, here's a picture of me. Like me. I mean, that's what we're doing on social media,
exactly,
right? I mean, that's
what
we're doing. Hey, look, here's a picture of me. Look at me. Like me. I mean, that actually would, if someone came up and did that to me, that would be the most awkward moment.
Well, yeah, but there is a similarity. Like when we were kids, you became known for what you did on the schoolyard, the playground. Like there are things that would happen that could rise your popularity or take it away. So depending on what it was, I mean, in many ways, it's like being in one big schoolyard, I feel.
But we were on the schoolyard with a limited number of people for a limited amount of time.
And
the schoolyard
exactly
would end.
Yes.
Now the schoolyard doesn't end. It's 24/7.
And that really kind of brings us to the place where I would love to hear from you, because even with that one last comment, the dynamic of limitations, I would love to hear about some of the boundaries and borders that we need to have, that we need to be able to practice, and we need to be able to talk about when we're posting information on social media.
Okay, so it's not just words, but it's pictures and images as well. I mean, everything we post, whether they're our words or articles or whatnot. So let me give you some personal guidelines I've come up with. And Jason, certainly this conversation we're having, we're just scratching the surface here. There's so much more that we can talk about. But let's bring it around here by sharing some very personal guidelines. And I share these because these are things that I've come up with for myself. I try. I endeavor. I need accountability on this. So part of this is, if you're going to enlist this, don't keep it to yourself. Get some trusted friends to monitor you. And if they see you straying beyond these guidelines, have them pull you back, rein you back in, change that up.
That's so good. Yeah,
so here are some things. This is not an end-all, cure-all, be-all, but these have worked I trust for me, and they're fluid in the sense that I may add to these as time goes on. I'm sure I will as I seek to integrate my faith into life. But here's some things I share with youth workers and parents for you to enlist in your own life and then to pass on to your kids. So I'm going to give them to you real quick here. First one is I say, and this is so negative, but remember, you're just one bad decision away from being a headline. Now, obviously, our behavior has to come from a heart that is oriented towards God. We can't just say, I'm not going to do that because I could get in trouble for that. We need to back up a little bit and say, I'm not going to do that because it's not right. So it's not so much about getting caught as it is about doing the right thing. So you know, we need to think about that. A second general guideline I have is to limit my time with technology. And it's always important if you think, even if you don't think you're using too much, ask someone who's close to you. If you're married, ask your spouse, am I spending too much time with my technology? And whatever they answer, that's the answer. And typically they're going to see it as you're spending more time than you should, than you might see. But that's the reality. And you know, perception is reality. So if you ask, do I have a problem, and they say you do have a problem, then you need to step back because it is affecting them. I mentioned seeking accountability. And then I think what we really need to do is always stop and pause and think before posting, replying, sending, or commenting on anything. Proverbs tells us in Proverbs 29:20, it says, do you see a man who speaks in haste? There's more hope for a fool than for him. And then Proverbs 10:19 says, when words are many, sin is not absent, but he who holds his tongue is wise. Okay, so to me, both those proverbs say, you know, step back. And this is the problem with social media. It allows us to indulge our impulsivity, and once it's out there, you can't pull it back. So it's always good to pause. Now, here's my personal guidelines. I always ask yourself these questions before you post. Number one, is what I'm about to put up there, does this matter? And if all we do is ask that question, about 95 to 99% of what most of us put online, we're not going to put up there because it really doesn't matter. Secondly, is this useful to others? And this is a question I think we need to ask, especially for those of us who realize that we have been redeemed by God, we live in the body of Christ, we want to build up the body. Is this useful? And if it's not useful, we're just wasting people's time. We shouldn't be doing that. Next, does it promote and reflect kingdom of God living? In other words, am I pointing to things that are good, true, right, and honorable, and to what human flourishing really is according to the scriptures? Or the next question would be, does it promote and reflect the kingdom of the world, the flesh, and the devil? Now, here's another question I think is important, and this is one that only you can answer. Does it glorify God, or does this glorify me? Is my intent here to glorify God, or is my intent here to glorify myself? And I've pulled a lot of stuff back. I haven't hit post, you know, because of that. And then lastly, I always ask this question, you know, come on, why am I doing this, really? Why am I doing this? So you want to pull back. Now, let me. Does that all make sense?
I think those are great. Okay. I think that you hit upon a couple of really good things. One bad decision from a headline, something that you often speak about, something that I've taken and applied to my own life. Limit your time with technology is so very important. I think a lot of us need to understand that. Sometimes we just need to take a Sabbath from technology. Seeking accountability, which I think we think a lot with something like pornography or sexuality, but we don't think about it with something like social media, which astonishes me because it's social media now that is a place for finding pornography. Yeah. And so having accountability, I think, is really important.
Can I interrupt you there? I'm just going to say this.
Yeah, you sure can.
And that is that, you know, what we need is someone who really knows us well, who we can say to them, because my desire is to worship God. It's not to promote myself. And we need someone who we can trust. We say, look, you have full freedom to step into my life and into my world and say to me, it seems like you're really working to promote yourself there. And you need to pull back. I mean, those are tough. I mean, that hurts when someone says that. But if they know us well, they're going to pick up on
needed.
That. Yeah, yeah, they're
yeah,
going to pick
I
up on
that.
Yeah, I
think that those are. I mean, those are the type of friends and allies and people you're doing life with that you want to have in your life. And you know, I'm thankful that I have my wife to be able to be one of those people. And I think that that's incredibly important. I think the other one that you said overall was pausing before posting. And then I love your personal ones. Does this matter? How is it useful to others? Does it promote and point towards the kingdom of God? And does it glorify God or glorify me? Which these are things that I often think about before posting. I don't spend as much time on social media sometimes because I just want to make sure that these are the things that are happening. I guess the one question I have is how do pictures of grandkids, how do pictures of our own kids fit in that? But I think that they can when you're really thinking about this and really applying some of these aspects
you are
posting, what you're putting up.
One of the things I hear from a lot of young moms right now is like, oh, I got to get off Instagram. I got to get off Facebook. Well, why? Well, I'm just feeling so much pressure. I've got to keep up with everyone. Well, that's not healthy. That's not good. And just get off. And the other danger we run is if we're always posting about our kids and we're finding our value and our worth and getting strokes from, you know, how other people see our family and see us as parents and see our kids, you're setting your kids up to grow up believing that my value and worth depends on how good I make my mom and my dad look.
Yeah.
As parents live vicariously. Yeah. Through their kids.
Well, yeah, I agree. And Walt, this is really good stuff, and I'm really hoping that our listening audience is able to take a lot of this, apply it, and have it be a part of the conversations that they're having in their home and in their youth ministries, and that will continue with even further conversation.
Yep.
Before we close out this podcast, I would love to hear from you some books or resources that you, beyond the Digital Kids Initiative, which we've talked about, which is at digitalkidsinitiative.com, but I would love to hear from you maybe some books that you would recommend that you've enjoyed or that you have laid out as resources for parents or practitioners.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot on this over the last several years, and I certainly haven't read everything. There's so much out there now, and a lot of it, unfortunately, is being being published because of the problems that we have, you know, the way that it's changing us, not for the good, but for the worse. And so there are many books about that are sounding warnings, and we need to read those. But there's some other books that are really helpful as well. Let me give you just a few here. A book I recommend to all parents and youth workers, to me this is required reading, is from the blogger Tim Challies. He's a pastor up in Canada. He's written a book called The Next Story, subtitled Faith, Friends, Family, and the Digital World. This is actually one that we have here at CPYU that we carry with us and try to get in the hands of people. You know, Tim basically found himself as a young dad saying, he was checking out on his family. There was a lot more happening as well, but he was basically found himself asking the question, do I own my technology or does my technology own me? And so he started to work through that practically and theologically. This is a very accessible, thoughtful, great book to frame the conversations on technology from a theological perspective. Another one that I think is really, really good, and it's not a long book, but it's a great book, is by John Dyer. I've had a chance to meet John and hear him speak, and I was really impressed with John Dyer, D-Y-E-R, will include a link to this. He's written a book called From the Garden to the City, The Redeeming and Corrupting Power of Technology. And, you know, he's talking about how, basically he's looking at technology through the lens of Scripture and also bringing in insights from some of the best thinkers on technology, theology, and culture. And how his basic argument is we've got to live an examined life when it comes to technology so that it doesn't enslave us and so that we can honor God and really flourish according to his plan for us. Very practical, very good. I can't recommend that highly enough. And then another one from a Christian perspective, Craig Detweiler has a book that he's written, published by Brazos Press, which is a sub-publisher imprint of Baker Books. And he's written a book called iGods, subtitled How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives. I read this about a year or so ago, and I'll tell you what I love about it. I have so many underlines in it. There's too many things to talk about. But it's just a really good book about how technology is shaping us and how to be aware of that and how to push back. And then two books, not written from a Christian perspective, but very helpful from the last couple of years. Catherine Steiner Adair has written a book called The Big Disconnect, and the subtitle on this one is Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. Very good book, very practical book, where she cites some great research and then just some good common sense for parents. And related to that, a book that may be a little bit more technical, written by Sherry Turkle, who teaches at MIT. So she's a very bright woman who has thought about these things, and she's writing a lot for parents right now. She's written a book called Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. So she's tracking with some of the theory there. Those are some of the best books that I've seen, and maybe we'll include more. I believe on our Digital Kids site we have a bibliography where you can go in there. Yes, we do. You can go in there and look at some of the books that are on there that are really good. So there's some places to start there, but I would start with The Next Story by Tim Challies and then move on from there.
That's great. Wow. Well, Walt, this is a lot of fun being able to interview you and to hear from you for the first time on our podcast. So this is great, and we'll get more opportunities to do this, I'm sure. So thank you for sharing and just diving into this important conversation. So, well, from all of us here at CPYU, we want to thank you for listening, and we look forward to being with you on the next podcast.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.